On this 31st day of August 2011 in San Diego, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, General History, Chapter 23, The Song of the Avanti Brahman, text number 42. Dviju Vacha, Na Ayam Janaha Me Sukha Dukkha Hetuhu Devata Atma Graha Karma Kalaha Manaha Param Karanam Amananti Sangsara Chakram Padivarteyet Yat Dvijuvacha Nayam Janome Sukhadukkha Hetur Na Devatatma Graha Karma Kalaha Manak Param Karanam Amananti Sangsara Chakram Parivartayet Yat. Translation. The Brahmin said, "These people are not the cause of my happiness and distress. Neither are the demigods, my own body, the planets, my past work, or time. Rather, it is the mind alone that causes happiness and distress and perpetuates the rotation of material life." No purport, I'll read the next one. Manoganan vai sujate baliyas tatashta karmani vilakshanani shuklani krishnan yata lohitani tebyak savarna sutayo bhavanti. The powerful mind actuates the functions of the material modes from which evolve the different kinds of material activities in the modes of goodness, ignorance, and passion. From the activities in each of these modes develop the corresponding statuses of life. Purport. In the mode of goodness, one considers oneself to be a saintly or wise person. In the mode of passion, one struggles for material success. And in the mode of ignorance, one becomes cruel, lazy, and sinful. By the combination of the material modes, one identifies oneself as a demigod, a king, a rich capitalist, a wise scholar, etc. These conceptions are material designations generated from the modes of nature, and they arrange themselves according to the tendency of the powerful mind to enjoy temporary sense gratification. The word baliyas in this verse, meaning very strong, indicates that the material mind becomes insensitive to intelligent advice. Even if we are informed that we are committing many sins and offenses in order to earn money, we may still think that money should be acquired at all costs, since without it one can neither perform religious ceremonies nor gratify the senses with beautiful women, mansions, and vehicles. Once the money is achieved, one suffers further problems, but the stubborn mind will never heed good advice in this regard. One must therefore give up mental concoction and control the mind in Krishna consciousness, as exemplified here by the Brahmin from Avanti. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chukshu unmilitam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So at the beginning of the Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, the only chapter we have extant, Lord Brahma gives us a very important instruction. From his realized meditation, he's realized that Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karana, that the Supreme Ishvara is Krishna. He has a form composed of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. He has no beginning. He has no origin. He is the origin of all. And he is the cause of all causes. The cause of all causes. Now, here, these two verses define the Brahman's realization of the cause of his misery. Right? The cause of his misery. So this search for the cause, for the actual cause of everything, of ourselves, of what we see, is the imperative of human life. Tato Brahma Jigyasa. It is said at the beginning of Vedanta Sutra, the Brahma Sutra, that having come to this human form of life and being intelligent enough, one should search out Brahman. And what is that Brahman? Janmadyasya yataha. That Brahman is that which has caused everything, given birth to everything. And the Adi means maintains and destroys everything. In other words, the cause of all causes, which is uncaused. So otherwise, what will we do? We will assume that the source of our happiness, source of our distress, is some subordinate cause, or some cause that's not the cause of all causes. And that's exactly what happens. Ordinary people consider. If someone, like right now, I like to give the example because out there it's so prominent in everyone's minds. Maybe in here we're not so aware of it. But this whole economic disaster that's still, you know, shaking the tree of this material world economically is very much in people's minds. And many people are thinking, "What? How has this come about? Nothing I did. You know, I was working nicely, I was paying my mortgage, doing this, 401k. Now what happened? I'm threatened with homelessness? So what do? They look for the cause. Oh, it's the banks. It's Wall Street. It's Obama. You know? No, it's not Obama. It's actually the Republicans. It's this, it's that, it's the weather, it's everything. Everything but the real cause. Now, of course, ultimately the cause of everything is Krishna. So we're not going to blame Krishna for our misery. What this intelligent Brahman is doing is he's eliminating ordinary causes, right? People think, oh, it's the Devas who did it. They're displeased with me, right? This is a classic thing in the Vedas. Therefore, I have to please the Devas. I have to worship them. If I just worship Chandi, right, Kali, then I'll get prosperity. You go to Bengal, there's tens of millions of people who believe that. They're not all Gaudiya Vaishnavs, you know, in Bengal. There's a huge Kali worship. You know, Calcutta means the city of Kali. And so they're looking for the immediate cause. They're looking for the nature. And then they relieve their unhappiness, you know. Or it must be the planets. Graha. My bad planets. This is why, you know, I happen to be born under this bad planet. Or due to my karma, you know. So if we propitiate the planet, so if we do this or that, somehow it'll change, or I can, you know, what's my horoscope? Why do people are interested in the horoscope? They want to know how they got into this situation and what they can do to navigate so that they can get better luck, right? Or it's just chance. Just chance. That's the cause of my misery. Bad luck. All these different reasons. Time itself, right? No. He exactly diagnoses the problem. And that is that it's the mind. And the mind that we have, the conditioned mind, is a result of our own activities in the mode of nature. We have created, if you will, this material mind. We wanted it. We wanted this material mind in order to control the senses so we can enjoy separately from Krishna. And the material mind is given to us by the interaction of the false ego with the modes of nature, right? The mode of goodness interacting with the false ego creates this mind, this material mind, and then from there come the senses, the sense objects, the sensations. Everything develops through the false ego interacting with the modes of nature. So it is the mind only that keeps us bound here, and it's the mind only that will liberate us. This is described. The mind absorbed in thoughts of sense gratification. And what's going on up there? Can we ask him to be a little bit quieter? Even if the door is there, there's none. Because we're closer now. this is explained. Everything is keyed on this mind. Any yoga practice, even bhakti yoga, ashtanga yoga, all the yogas, They ultimately come back to trying to fix the mind on the Supreme, to draw the mind away from its absorption in material things and fix it on the Supreme. And we should know, as this Brahman does, that of course it recalls the famous verse from Lord Brahma in the 14th chapter. Tateno kampam susumikshamanam bunjana evatmakatam vipakam. So let's just think of those two lines. One is tatte anukampam susumikshamanam. One who is always seeing your mercy everywhere. You know, this is Brahma praying to Krishna, little baby Krishna with a little yogurt in his hand. But he realized now, oh, this is my father. This is the Supreme Personality of God. And I'm not going to be fooled anymore. You know, even though he's in this wonderful mood and this form, he's still the Supreme. And so he's praying to him fervently. Very important prayers in the 14th chapter, worth reviewing periodically. Wonderful commentary by the Acharyas. And this verse is perhaps the most quoted. You know, there's at least half a dozen very important verses there that are quoted often by Srila Prabhupada. So this one, he says, Tate anukampam susumikshamano bunjana evadnukatam vipakam. So one who sees is always looking for your mercy, and indeed seeing your mercy in everything, and understanding that everything bad that's happening, every pain, every suffering that I might be going through, is due to my own activities. Bunjana can mean enjoy, it can mean experience. Or let's say experience. I'm experiencing the good and the bad, sukha dukkha. Right? That's all a result of atmakritam, things that I have done in the past. In other words, it's not anyone else, it's not my neighbors, it's not my so-called enemies, it's not the planets, it's not even my karma. You know, karma is just a record of what I've done. It's me. I've done it. And therefore, one cannot feel enmity. One should not feel look outward for that. But what's the solution to it? It's not any material solution. It says, Ridvagvapubi vidadhanamasti. If one, in spite of all the difficulties in this world, understands that was just a result of what I've done, I can't blame anyone else, and is always looking for the mercy of the Lord, seeing it as the mercy. You know, the difficulties are actually the mercy. Kunti defines that. And continues to offer obeisances and worship from the heart, not just superficially. Rid, vag, vapubir. With the heart, sincerely, with the words, with the body, with the senses, continues to offer obeisances and serve. Then you buy a ticket to Goloka. Yojivati mukti pade sadaya bak. Daya bak is described by the Acharya, meaning so you inherit. You know, if you're a son or daughter in these days even, you know, if you're the proper heir or something, just stay alive. You know, you don't have to do anything, just stay alive. So Prabhupada explained, just stay alive in Krishna consciousness. Stay alive. Continue to offer. There'll always be difficulties. You know, more or less, there'll be difficulties in this material world and in our Krishna conscious career. But you have to continue offering from the heart. You know, rid bhag bhag bhapubi vidadham namaste. You live that way. Jivedi. Yo mukti pade. You have bought a ticket to a place in the spiritual world which is mukti pade, the place of liberation in devotional service. So it's very much related to this same mood. Now this Avanti Brahma, let's see what he's gone through already. Right? He's been reformed, radically reformed, right, by his experience, and must be from instruction now, is coming to the fore, and he's realized what's happened to him. He's gone from a position of just being a nasty, greedy person who you won't even spend any money on his family or on his own body. You know, you can imagine, you know, just being in the room there with the gold, you know, and the jewels, just, you know, the classic miser profile. You know, nobody likes that person. You know, so then it was taken away. He wasn't even doing any pious activities. Wasn't offering anything to the gods, you know, devas. He was just so self-centered. So it was gradually taken away by his family, by thieves, by time, by whatever. You know, then he finds himself bereft. And he doesn't have the wealth even of the affection of his family. He's thrown that away. And so now he's got nothing. Right? And then we see, you know, he's being insulted, he's depressed, right? I mean, you can imagine. Prabhupada, for someone who once has wealth, we were just chanting this morning, and then suddenly loses that, he can hardly live. Prabhupada tells a story like that of someone who, during the war, you know, Prabhupada lived in India during World War II. And in any war, somebody gets very rich and a lot of people get very poor, or even die, obviously. So this fellow, I think it was in Calcutta, he had been very wealthy, but due to the vicissitudes of war, he lost all his money. And he just couldn't live. Now, he wasn't any poorer. He probably was wealthier than so many others who were on the street and, you know, living in Calcutta. In India, there's always a lot of poor people. But they're managing somehow. You know, you grow up in that environment and you can tolerate. But if you come from here down to here, the materialist is very, very difficult to live. The famous stories during the Depression, the stock market crash. You had these rich bankers or stock market guys. They're committing suicide, jumping out the windows. That's kind of apocryphal. There may have been one guy who did that. But there were suicides, you know, because of that. Now, the contrast, just a you know, a sidebar kind of, is the Goswamis. At least three of them were very, very wealthy. Rupa, Sanatan, and Raghunath. Raghunath was extremely wealthy. You know, like Bill Gates or something would be today. Just, he had unlimited.
Sanatan were also,
who else?
They were also, all of them were.
All of them?
Yeah. All of them. Very, very affluent. I mean, we have a story of Sanatan Goswami dividing his...
No, I said Sanatan, Rupa, and Raghunath. I don't know if Raghunath, but Gopal and Jiva. Yeah. But anyway, so there's that famous verse from the Goshamastika. Chaktvat turnamashesha manadapati, shenin sadat tuchavat. So here they were, you know, describing especially Rupa, you know, and Sanatan. They were surrounded by aristocracy. They were in the administration of the king. They had anything they wanted, you know. And they gave it up instantly. Turna means very quickly. This is a very important word. Don't delay. Maya makes you delay, procrastinate. Immediately, as soon as Lord Chaitanya, they saw Lord Chaitanya and he told them to go to Vrindavan, boom, they're out of there. And Tuchavat, it was insignificant, you know. Just imagine, you know, millions of dollars, influence, whatever you want. Tuchavat. And they became the protectors of the people. Bhutva Dina Ganeshiko, of the fallen people, the wretched of the earth, you know. In order to help them and become... you know, they had to do that. You know, they had to become one of them and even more poor, you know. And Karuda, out of mercy, and took on, instead of the, you know, regal raiment that they were used to, you know, they had rejected clothes they found in, you know, we would find in a dumpster or something, you know. And that's what they wore. Not even a house, you know. So here's an example, very wealthy down to the poor. But were they depressed? No, they were in bliss. Again and again they were floating and rising in the ocean, a nectar ocean of the love of the gopis for Krishna. So they were the most wealthy, although externally they were very poor. So here's this Avanti Brahma. Now he doesn't talk about the gopis here, but he's realized, he's become inured. He's not suffering anymore from the insults and the poverty and all of these things. You know, this is an incredible display of tolerance to tikshava. You know, because inside he's realized it doesn't affect me. You know, it's just like remember how we got here. Just remember a little bit. Vijvashi loved to talk about the context. At the end of the last chapter, Uddhava asked the question, at the beginning of this chapter, how can one tolerate the insults of others? You know, they're more piercing and painful, especially of someone who you know or you love, who suddenly insults you and demeans you. It's worse than being pierced by arrows, that's described. It's very, very painful. How can one come to the point of tolerating that? And that's what this story is about, describing that. Because that's what we have to come to. You know, this is the first lesson back of Krishna, practical lesson, is tolerance. Matra sparsha tukonteya. Shitoshna sukadukada. Agamapayanoni just tamta tikshasva. This word to tikshasva. Is that the contact of the sense with the sense objects are going to produce varieties of experience. Some pleasurable, some painful. Sometimes too cold, sometimes it's too hot. You know, that's an example. And it comes and goes. So one has to tolerate. If you can't tolerate, you can't make any advancement. Yam hinavita yam tete purusham purushashva samadukha sukham dhiram so amitatvaya kalpata. If you want to become eligible for amrita, which here means liberation, eternal life, the nectar of Krishna consciousness, then you have to be tolerant of these things. If it doesn't bother you, at least not to the point where it's, you know, completely disturbing you, then you can go forward. So sometimes it's very, very difficult. It's easier to tolerate physical things than the emotional thing. Insults, your enemies, you know, your friends turning on you. That's why it says in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, more advanced are those who see the enemies, the friends, the mediators as the same. You see? Those who see gold and stone the same, and okay, that's advancement. But when you can really be advanced and tolerant in the interpersonal aspect of our lives, which is after all the most important, then you're more advanced. So that's true for devotees as well. So here, let's see what he's saying here. It's the mind, right? Mano gunan vai. So the modes of nature, they reside in the mind. Someone says, you're in the modes. It's not that the modes are out there and you're in them. It means that your mind is being affected by a certain mode. You can be in the middle of a bar. I don't know if they do it anymore, but I remember in the 80s, devotees would go from L.A. Women would go, especially. They would go to Las Vegas to the bars to collect during Christmas marathon. I don't know how many books they were giving out, but they were definitely collecting. And they were, you know, saying this, saying that. You know, in the middle of the mode of ignorance, very thick, you know. But they were able to, or, you know, today, going to the concerts, the mode of passion, ignorance, right? But if you're in the fire of Krishna consciousness, your mission is straight, you've chanted good rounds, and you're distributing transcendental literature, then you can come through that without being affected. Not too much, anyway. You still have to, you know. But the point is that you are protected. The modes are in here. You allow the modes to affect you. Once the modes are affecting the mind, then you think in a certain way, you act in a certain way, and you strengthen those modes. If you're in the mode of ignorance, you'll tend to do things in the mode of ignorance. You'll tend to search out people in the mode of ignorance. You know, take drugs, which will put you more in the mode of ignorance. It's a syndrome. That's why it's a mode. You know, a mode is like many different things at once that are strengthening each other. So it's that mind infected with the modes that is our real enemy. You see, that's explained in the 6th chapter. The mind is the friend and the mind is the enemy. And unfortunately, after many, many births of living in the modes and complete ignorance, we're living with our worst enemy. But we also have allies. We also have weapons that can help to curb this mind, reform the mind, and make it into our friend. That's the whole idea of Krishna consciousness. That's why this wonderful verse describing the mind is sometimes described as this the wind. You know, the wind just had a little hurricane on the East Coast. You know, everyone freaked out. You know, so you can't control it. You can just try to, you know, do something to counteract its effects. There's no way of controlling it. Similarly, a horse, a wild horse, you know, it can, if the horse is pulling you this way and that way, uncontrolled, then you're in danger, right? Or the bee likes to go here, there, you know, unsteady. So these are different analogies for the mind. The wonderful prayer that comes to mind from the Padyabali, comparing it to the to a horse. And how, you know, what can we do? You know, how can we control it? We're living with our worst enemy. It's taken us to hell repeatedly, birth and death, different bodies, different species. It's all this mind, you know. But at least we know that, right? So the we can't control it, but we can pray. We can pray fervently for Krishna to control it, to give us the strength to control it, to, you know. And that's really what Hare Krishna is. But here's a very specific prayer in the Panjabali. It says, Bhavod Bhava Klesha Tahatas Paribrahmam India Ka Patantare Niyam Yatam Madhava Me Manohayas Niyam Yatam Madhava Me Manohayas Torangri Shanko Dhrita Bhakti Bandane. Very nice prayer. So, Bhavod Bhava, rising up from life in the material world. Bhava Urbhava, you know, just being in the material world. Klesha, there's so many miseries, right? 3-4 miseries, you know, we know, there's no doubt. And he compares us to whips. Kasha Shatahada, hundreds of them. I'm being whipped, my mind is being whipped, the soul is being whipped by these miseries, you know, again and again. The horse of my mind is being whipped in this way. And it's running here and there. Paribham indriya kapatavare, on the dangerous path of the senses. These senses, last night we were just speaking about this verse from Prabodhananda, how the senses are like poisonous snakes, you know, they can bite you. All of a sudden you're trying to practice yoga, you know, and this sense gets attracted over there, and before you know it, your mind is a million miles away from Krishna. It's like a snake suddenly biting you with the poison of sense gratification. So either that or the dangerous path. You go down this dangerous path, and before you know it, your mind is away from Krishna. So he says, Kapatantare, this horse, my mind is going on the path. So he's praying to Madhava, Niyamyatam, Madhava, please control it, or please give me the power to control it. Madhava, me manoha, this horse of my mind, and, I love this part, it says, bind it to the hitching post, right? You want to bind it to the, remember the old westerns? You bind it to the hitching post of your lotus feet. With the ropes with the of pure devotional service. See? That's the way to control the mind. But it requires that prayerful attitude. That's saying, well, I can't control it. Krishna, you help control it. The prayer of Rupa Goswami with the B. Krishna bhavandam bande manmanasa madhukadabha bhainita padapankacha makadande. Oh, Krishna, dearest Lord, I pray to you and I bow to you and then entreat. Please place the bee in my restless mind in the honey of your lotus feet. So, there's a whole song like that. So this is the strength of the devotee. The strength of the devotee is realizing his helplessness and praying with absolute fervor and sincerity to Krishna. To please give me the control my mind, or give me the means to control my mind, bless me with the spiritual strength, you know, that kind of prayer. And there's so many explicit prayers like that. You know, like Kunti. Oh, Madhava, please ever fill my mind. You fill my mind. Try me anandi vishaya mati madhupate sukrit. With thoughts of thee, not any other kind. As Ganges torrent flows into the sea, let all my love flow constantly to you. So, analyzing here, in the modes of nature, the different activities evolve, right? We know that. And from the activities, you develop the corresponding statuses of life. So we've kind of made our own destiny here. It's all on us. But that's the good thing about realizing that is that it's also in our power to change it. Yeah. We are not imprisoned in such a way that we're helpless, that there's no way that we can get out of this. You know, there is a way. Of course, the way is dependent on the mercy of the Lord. But that's abundantly clear that mercy is available to us. That is the greatest gift of this movement, of Srila Prabhupada, of giving us faith that the mercy of Krishna is available to every single one of us if we approach in the right way and we follow the instructions and we chant sincerely, that mercy will be given to us. And we can even feel it, you know. You can feel the mind changing, you can feel the senses, you know, not so much, you know, obsessed with the things of the senses. But the trick is, as we've been saying in the evening class, we're just completing that lust section at the end of chapter 3. You know, what is it that forces us to act against our own interests? Oh, it's tama and krodha. Well, where do tama and krodha reside? In the mind, right? And the senses and the intelligence. So the enemy has taken over these strategic places. So are we helpless? No. We're not helpless because by the intervention of Krishna, through the agency of his great devotees, and through his books, through his words, it's the sound, through the words as recorded in the books, and through the Sangha, we can get the clue about how to act. It all depends on the action with our mind, with our senses, in such a way that we can transcend the modes. We can come up to the mode of in the goodness, stay in the mode of goodness, and use that, as explained in the Bhagavatam, as a platform to really transcend the modes. And when the mind is really fixed and trained properly, it becomes our best friend. This is called spontaneous devotion. Like we're now spontaneously devoted to the senses. Spontaneously devoted. As soon as the belly is hungry, oh, feed it. You know, the tongue, oh, serve it. You know? The urges of the sleep, all right. with servants, with slaves, really. You know, so that same spontaneous devotion, you know, urge to serve, can be there for Krishna. You know, over time. It's not, you know, it's not a huge austerity to come to Mangalarti. You really want to see the deities and be seen by the deities. You know, you feel it's good. It's something good. I want it. I can't just stay in the sack. No, that's painful. Right? Whereas before, you know, just getting up by 6 o'clock is like inconceivable to the vast mass of people out here. I'll just speak of 3:30, 4 o'clock. But you realize, oh, this is a great time. You know, this is the time when everything is quiet out there. We can actually focus the mind on Krishna. You know, and we can experience Krishna through his holy name and the Sangha and the prayers and everything. It's great. You know, that's the mind coming out of the thrall of the modes of nature. It's not easy. So, this is Suklani Krishnani Lohitani. This is just, white and black. And red. This is different symbols, color symbols for the different modes of nature. So the whole idea, all right, we've come to 8:30. The whole idea is to sincerely take up those activities of the senses and the mind and the intelligence, which will mitigate, decrease, and ultimately cleanse away entirely the influence of the modes of nature in the mind. And that's what bhakti is all about. And this Avanti Brahman has realized that. This is a test. It's always a test. When difficulties come, it's a test. And, you know, to pass the test, we need to remain faithful and sincere and continue our devotional service even when the difficulties come. To show, you know, that to make advancement. And more advanced is to take on the difficulties voluntarily for the service of the Lord. Then you really make quick advancement. But when they come, they're going to come anyway. And you should be ready, you know, to tolerate and not blame Krishna, not blame your god brother, your god sister, you know, my whatever. It's our fault, and we can progress by realizing that and continuing to serve in every circumstance. So, any questions or comments on these few points? Powerful mind. I'll read this last second verse again. The powerful mind actuates the functions of the material modes from which evolve the different kinds of material activities in the modes of goodness, ignorance, and passion. From the activities in each of these modes develop the corresponding statuses of life. Any discussion? All glories to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.